It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Now, back to
Will and Divvy
on 95.7 The Game.
All I know is when students are registering for classes, oh, nobody wants mean Mr. Grandy. Watch out, kid. Don't get Mr. Grandy. He's a tough grader.
Well, you just
watch out for him.
I'm preparing them for the real world.
That's fine.
And if you're savvy, you take Grandy credit, no credit.
I love that Grandy's talking about the real world while the four of us sit in a studio talking sports every day. We don't live in the real world.
It's been my real world for 26 years
yes,
now, so that's
too.
All I know.
Yeah,
that
all real
blowing
world.
The whistle.
Yeah.
You want a baby Brock Purdy and give him A's all over the place? Somebody's making $60 million, doesn't have Debo and Kittle to throw to? Be my guest.
Well, I'm going to look at 32 points without Christian McCaffrey, and that was with a bunch of field goals. That was with receivers dropping balls in the end zone. Sheesh, I wonder how many they would have. Wonder how many they would have scored if the wide receivers had gotten an A. Oh, wait, they did in your class.
Yeah,
I forgot. Greg Cosell, our conversation, we loved it. We've got it for you in 5 minutes. Let's take a couple more calls. Scott Livermore, hi Scott, you're on Willie and Dibby.
What's happening, guys? Just want to tell you, you're doing a great job today. Love listening to you guys every day on my way home and in the way to work. Couple
Thanks,
things
Scott.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome. One, want to switch to the defense side of the ball. I give them an A+. They look fantastic. You know, we were flying around, hitting people. You know, it was the energy was fantastic. But I had a question. It will pivot from the grading schedule. At the end of the game, they brought in Tyrod Taylor, right? Veteran from forever ago.
Yep.
And what I noticed, right, he's a little bit more of a mobile quarterback than Mr. Old Man Rogers. And they seem to, you know, I don't want to say walk down the field and score, but I was curious to get your take on him coming in the game, him moving a little bit more, using his legs, throwing the ball. Do you think that's something we need to watch out for, or do you think that was more so because we're in a prevent defense, there's 5 minutes left in the game, didn't matter too much? So I was curious to kind of get your thoughts on how you viewed a pocket passer quarterback against us the majority of the game, bring in Tyrod Taylor, and all of a sudden they're moving down the field and they scored a touchdown that we didn't want them to have, but they did. So I was curious to get your take on your perspectives on that.
Yeah, thanks, Scott.
Yeah.
Dibs, you were nodding your head while he was asking that.
Yeah, I do think that it's because they played super soft. And, you know, you had your regular defense in there, but you were playing soft. You weren't trying to send extra rushers and get the ball loose. You just wanted them to not score immediately. So you played soft, and you let them have 5 and 7. I'm seeing 3, and there's a 16 and a 6 and another 6. And, yeah, they scored. And they scored with 30 seconds left in the game.
Yep.
Congratulations, Jets. There you go. Now, the other piece is, I think in the past, they have had some challenges with mobile quarterbacks. But then again, who doesn't?
Who doesn't? Yeah,
like Lamar Jackson.
Mobility.
Oh, we have trouble with Lamar Jackson. You're damn right, you do.
There's a reason mobility is preferred. You can't tell the Niner defenders, it's like, okay, this week, be faster than you are. So, like, I can only answer his question. I'd answer it the same way you do, except to add, like, .. TBD. Do they have problems with mobile quarterbacks? Don't know yet. Won't know till October 6th when they take on Kyler Murray. Because Sam Darnold and Matt Stafford and Jacoby Brissett or Drake May are not going to offer anything crazy to you either. And then week 5, Kyler Murray, let's take a look. But yeah, what you said, you know, it's hard. It's hard to chase. That's why everybody wants a mobile quarterback if you can find one.
And you hope that with this new defensive team, team that you have, and you've got Floyd and Bosa on opposite sides, and if they can rush and contain, you know, you rush around the outside, you keep the quarterback somewhat in the pocket, you force him to beat you in the interior, and you got Hargrave, and you got Collins, and you got some other big bodies who hopefully are collapsing.
I mean, you look to last year, I know it's a different group and a different coordinator,
yep,
but like, I mean, they ended Jalen Hurts' season with the way that they were very disciplined in going about pressuring him because he moves so well. So I know that that's only one example, but right, they played Kyler last year. You know, I can't. Off
they had
the top
Dobbs.
Of my head,
they played Dobbs the
they
first time.
They played Dobbs. They beat. That's right. Beat him. You know, but like, yeah, they'll make some plays.
Yep.
They'll make some plays.
Lamar beat him, but that was
Lamar,
largely
sure.
You beat yourself
totally.
With the five turnovers. Brock throwing four picks.
Yep. Rebecca San Leandro. Hi, Rebecca. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to add to the conversation. I'm in agreement that Brock Purdy only deserves a B+. The game that was called by Shanahan, it really wasn't about him. The running game, the kicker, and the offense and defensive line. So it's like gymnastics. Certain vaults are only worth so many points. Level of difficulty for him, he gets a B+. So.
Yeah, Rebecca,
tough
that's
fair, Rebecca, tough but
yeah,
fair.
Can I ask you a question? Like, do you believe if it's not an A, it's because, like, there has to be a demerit in there? Like, did you see Brock do anything wrong that you didn't like?
Well, Brock, look, it wasn't about Brock. What I didn't like, I didn't really get a chance to see. No, did he do what Shanahan asked? Yes, but what Shanahan called is only worth a B+ for Brock because it's not about Brock.
Yeah. Okay.
About the other players.
Yeah. So Rebecca, thank you very much. I mean, that's just a concept that, I mean, we see that very, very differently. I just don't know how you can downgrade somebody who, and by the way, here's the other thing I'll say about that. Like, there's got to be something to be said here for when a player does things that are high degree of difficulty, but you get used to seeing them, so you just shrug your shoulders. Like, I don't, like, look at Brock's, you know, per yardage per attempt or whatever. This idea, oh, he just, you know, little bubble screens and whatever. No, he's pushing the ball downfield. Juwan Jennings plays over the middle of the field. George Kittle, big lob ball to him down the left sideline. We've already talked about the Ayuk drop. Like, these were not piece of cake throws. We're just used to seeing him do it.
Yeah, he's done it for, you know, the better part of two seasons now. He is ninth in football in yards per attempt. So,
okay.
You know, he didn't necessarily air it out a ton, but he didn't really have to. So it's going to be hard to judge Brock Purdy because Monday night he was asked to do that. Don't turn it over, move the chains, make a couple of difficult throws, and win the game. And so all those boxes got checked.
Greg Cosell joined us earlier, and when we talk about exactly what we're talking about, basically the grades for all of the players out there, for the groups, and looking ahead to what the Niners are facing and what Nick Bosa says is a much harder assignment this week in Minnesota, we touched on it all. He is the senior producer of NFL Films, breaks down tape like no other. He's Greg Cosell, and he joined us earlier, and we started by asking him about Jordan Mason's career night on Monday night, and more importantly, what he looked like in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot there that with the run game. But if you're just speaking about him, you know, I think that was evident even early on, but it was clear as the game progressed how physical a runner he is. And there were some clear examples where the Jets defense later in the game was not particularly thrilled with having to tackle him. You know, he's one of those runners that you wouldn't say he's shifty and elusive. He's a downhill velocity runner. He has natural power. There's a physical presence to his running style. He has just enough lateral quickness where he can work effectively in confined space. And as I said, he's got really good finishing traits. He's a difficult guy to tackle and probably not a lot of fun to tackle.
I can't imagine it. And it seemed like he got to the second level ad nauseum against the Jets defense. Those holes were gigantic.
They sure were.
Did they go about the run scheme differently, Greg? Because it seemed like there was less use check and more just straight ahead zone power with with Jordan Mason.
Yeah, there were multiple run game concepts, as there always are, with the 49ers. You know, I think when you play the Niners, you're very conscious of having to defend the C gap. That's where, you know, so people can kind of visualize that, you know, right next to the center, the offensive center is the A gap. You go over one, it's the B gap. You go over one more, it's the C gap. That's kind of where their run game is foundationally built. But obviously they do more than that. But so they did a number of different things. The key thing was that he ran almost exclusively out of what we would call base personnel. When Juszczyk was on the field, when there were two tight ends on the field, when there was both Juszczyk and two tight ends, 23 of his 28 runs came in these base personnel packages.
Greg, I'm curious to know if you saw them running to the right more often than in the past, because famously they love to run behind Trent
sure.
Williams, but it looked like they were running to the right more often than in the past. Is that so?
You know, I didn't chart it, so I don't know the exact answer, and I don't want to make something up, but I didn't get the sense that they were only working to one side. I felt like it was pretty multiple. You know, it's funny. Sometimes the shorter runs are the really cool runs. Like, I thought that his 5-yard touchdown run in the third quarter was just an example of great design and execution. I thought that you had an unbelievable double team by the center, Brendel, and Banks, the left guard, and it was on Quinnen Williams, who's obviously a really good player. I love the way Kittle inserted as a lead blocker on the stacked linebacker Mosley. And then Samuel came in from the right side of the formation and kind of cracked back on the safety Clark. I thought, you know, that was just one of those runs. Obviously, it was a touchdown, but it wasn't a long run necessarily. But it was just beautifully designed and executed.
Just a clinic in the run game. I can't help but get my eyes on Dominic Pooney over there in the right guard making his first start. What
he
did you see
good.
On the film from Dominic?
Yeah, he looked really good. To be honest with you, I didn't watch a ton of preseason football. I'm being honest, it's not my favorite thing. But
that's good honesty.
I thought that he showed early in the game and then throughout the game both strength as a run blocker. I thought he was good at one-on-one pass protection. You know, there's two blocks that in the run game, more than two, but two that you have to be able to execute in the NFL or as a guard in particular, or you're not going to be a starting guard. One is the backside cutoff block. So if the zone run game goes away from you, you have to be able to execute the backside cutoff block. Then in the zone run game, when it goes to your side, you have to be able to execute the front side reach block. In other words, the reach block is a case where the player is just outside of you and you have to get outside of him to seal him to the inside. Those are two blocks that you have to be able to execute, one on the backside, one on the front side, and I thought that he did that very well in this game. And he's going to have to continue to do it well.
Senior producer, NFL Films, Greg Cosell is with us here on Willard and Dibbs, as he will be every single Wednesday afternoon on 95.7 The Game. Greg, people for a while now have been running out of questions to ask about Brock Purdy, but one of the ones that was still remaining was, boy, I wonder what he would look like without Christian McCaffrey. So, Greg, what did he look like without Christian McCaffrey?
Well, I mean, to me, those two things are mutually exclusive. I mean, obviously, McCaffrey's a great player, but I mean, when Purdy has to drop back and throw a ball, that's not necessarily a function of Christian McCaffrey. I thought Purdy was kind of Purdy. He was efficient. He made good throws. He's got enough movement that he can move around and make plays. Look, I don't know if we discussed this last week. I can't remember. You know, I'm old, guys. I can't remember what we discussed last week. But you know, Purdy is the scheme and the system and Purdy's ability to execute it at a high level all go together. And, you know, there's some great examples of that. Kittle, the 26-yarder to start the second quarter field goal drive, was a beautifully designed what we call a flood concept. It's a three-level stretch concept. Kittle ran the intermediate route. Beautiful design. I'm sure you guys remember Juszczyk's 34-yard reception, which was a a Kyle Shanahan classic, because what he likes to do is put a second-level defender who has both a run and a pass responsibility. He likes to put that player in conflict, and that's exactly what he did on the Hughes-Check 34-yard reception. That was beautiful design. When I saw that play on the coaching tape, you know, I got excited. That's what I love about football. But, you know, Purdy just executes what he's asked to execute at a really high level, and I think people lose sight of how difficult that is to do play after play after play, week after week after week, and they view him, well, he's just running a great system. You know, that's really hard to do, and he does it at a really high level.
Yeah, it was a clinical performance from Brock, and yeah, he didn't have to overwhelm to go out there and have a pretty lopsided victory for the 49ers. I want to ask you about the defense, because other than the early drive in the first half, they had their way with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets offense. What did you see on the film as to why the Niners D had such an edge?
Well, I think their D-line, I mean, you could argue that the main D-line, obviously they sub and have a rotation, but when you have Bosa and Floyd on the edge and Hargrave and Collins inside, and I think we talked about Collins last week, Collins has always been a really, really good player, and I think 49er fans are going to really like this guy, and it showed up the other night, but their defensive front is really, really good, and it's just really difficult to block. And then there's Fred Warner, who I've been saying for years is just the best linebacker in football. I mean, his ability to play inside out with speed and range and his ability to diagnose things instantly, I mean, there's no one as good as Fred Warner at the linebacker position in the NFL. You know, and they've got the thing that I think is overlooked now, too, is they have tremendous length at linebacker, because when they're in their nickel and it's Warner and Campbell, you've got 6'3 and 6'4, and those are traits. People might not think about that, but that kind of length, those are traits.
So, Greg, here's a question that comes up a lot with 49er fans. There's this thought that whatever Steve Wilks was calling last year just wasn't in alignment with, you know, the defensive line and the secondary and whatever Kyle Shanahan likes to run. The idea this year was they were going to get back to who they were before the hiring of Steve Wilks, with Nick Sorensen and Brandon Staley calling plays. What did you see? What can you explain to our audience with regard to the new regime?
You know, and I'm going to be totally honest here, those are hard questions, and I'll tell you why. Because you'd have to be there in their meetings to understand how things are taught, what they're specifically asked to do. I mean, I think when all's said and done, like in this particular game, they hardly rushed more than four. I think twice on what Rodgers have maybe 23 or 24 dropbacks, I think twice they rushed five. You know, my guess is that this is going to be a defense that's going to rely predominantly on their on the four-man pass rush. Now, there are things they do in third down and sort of pure pass situations with what we call loaded fronts, where they line up three defensive linemen to one side of the center. Often Fred Warner will walk up to the guard opposite that load side, and they'll do some pressure schemes from that. But I think this is going to be a defense that relies a lot on the four-man pass rush, as long as it's being effective, and most weeks it will be. You know, there's always some weeks, you know, that things don't work exactly the right way. You know, I think from a coverage perspective, we saw in this game multiple coverage concepts on third down out of their nickel. They don't play dime. They're a nickel sub defense. We saw cover two, cover one, cover three. I think you'll see these kinds of things depending on the opponent. By NFL standards, I don't think they'll be overly detailed. Now, having said that, if I was sitting in the meetings, I'd probably have a different view. But I don't think they're going to be one of those teams that does a million things. I think it's going to be more execution-based than heavily scheme-based. That would be my sense.
Yeah, the stats indicate that they played out of the nickel 76% of the time and just 24% with the three linebackers. And the second linebacker, fans are concerned, Greg, about Devondre Campbell. He was guarding Wilson a couple of times in that first touchdown drive. It didn't go well. Does he have the speed to hold up in this defense when they go to the nickel and just two linebackers?
Yeah, I mean, he's got length. He can move. I mean, obviously, he's not going to be covering wide receivers man-to-man. There are sometimes the offense, through formation, through motions, can get a wide receiver on a linebacker. That does happen in the league, and there's really very few linebackers that can match up. So that's not a knock on Campbell. I mean, if anybody saw the Chiefs in the Thursday night opener, the way they got Rice matched up on linebackers and good linebackers, then, you know, that happens. They got him matched up on Roquan Smith, who I think most people would agree is a pretty damn good linebacker. So that's not a knock on Campbell, the fact that maybe Wilson beat him once on, and I don't remember the specific play, but I mean, you know, that's not the way you're going to evaluate Campbell, by his ability to defend wide receivers.
Obviously, there's been a ton of talk the last handful of weeks about Brandon Ayuk, and we love what you had to say last week when you talked about his fit in this system. Because he's being eased in, yes, there was at least one, maybe two dropped passes.
He dropped a touchdown.
Yeah. How would you compare what we saw from Brandon in this game to what you're used to seeing from him?
Well, I think he's played enough games in the National Football League that we know what he is. I mean, obviously he had that touchdown drop, which I'm sure he'd make that catch 9 out of 10 times. I think there was another one where I think it was a quick slant that went off his hands. You know, it's probably a rust issue. No matter what you do and what you do in the off season, if you're not in camp and you're not going through the whole process, it's different when you get into a real game. I mean, I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Brandon Ayuk. He's played a lot of games in the league. He's been a good receiver. We talked about him last week. He's not all of a sudden going to be a bad receiver. You know, he had a bad drop. He dropped a touchdown. It was very visible. It's a national TV game. You know, so it happens.
Greg, you're officially our pivot point in the week, where we go from looking back to looking ahead, and the Niners getting ready to head to Minnesota, Sunday morning game on the fake field up there in Minnesota. What have you seen on the film from the Vikings that 49er fans should keep an eye out for on Sunday morning?
Well, let's look at the Vikings defense. They were very interesting this past week, and it could have been a function of who they were playing. Obviously, the Giants do not have a great offense. But one of the things that Brian Flores did a year ago, which was fascinating, and you rarely ever see this in the NFL, is it was a team that had the most three-man pass rushes in the league and the most six-man pass rushes in the league. Now, against the Giants, they stayed pretty basic with four-man pass rushes and played a lot of coverage behind it. Again, I'm not Brian Flores. I don't know what he'll do against the Niners, but that three-man versus six-man pass rush deal was fascinating to me watching their tape a year ago, because you rarely see that kind of thing in the league. And then, of course, on offense, and we can talk about this, you guys can jump in, you got your old buddy Sam Darnold.
Yep.
He looked good last week.
Well, what'd you see? Like, what you know, because he was here, but we didn't really ever get to see him play.
No.
So, yeah, what did you see from Sam?
I'll tell you what I saw, and I think this is where coaching comes into play. Kevin O'Connell, obviously coming from the Shanahan and McVay tree, you saw Darnold with really clean footwork, really understanding the connection between his drop and the route concepts. You saw some really well-schemed, well-designed play concepts that really presented him with clean, defined reads so that he could hit his back foot, and if it required him just to hit his back foot and deliver, he'd do that. If it required a hitch, he did that really cleanly. He looked extremely comfortable. Now, it's one game. No one's going to sit here after one game and say, man, this guy's on his way to a great year. But if we're talking this same way after six or seven games, then to me, you really have to talk about the coaching element. Because don't forget, he was coached last year, we know, with the Niners, even though he didn't play. And now he's with Kevin O'Connell, who's really, really good. So sometimes that's the difference, because you're dealing with a kid, and you know this. Big kid, physical kid, throws the ball well. There's nothing from a physical trait standpoint that he can't do. He always had other issues, including mechanical and including what he was seeing, but he looked very comfortable this past week.
Looked like they were moving the ball around, too, to the various weapons. Justin Jefferson was not too much of an isolated target. I'm curious about the run game from what you saw from Minnesota. Looks like a little bit of a committee, and they use the fullback a little bit, too, don't they?
Oh, they play a lot out of 21 personnel as well with Ham. I can't off the top of my head remember how many snaps he had, but they did that last year. They do it now. Yeah, they have a run game with the fullback as well, and they've got Aaron Jones, who's a really good back and a very good receiver. Got to be careful about that. You know, last week's game obviously was such that they got ahead. It was evident the Giants weren't really going to move the ball, so it didn't really require them to be probably as diverse and multiple offensively as they could be, as they probably went into the game with, but didn't need it. So we'll see how it goes. You'd assume this will be a closer game. But keep in mind, as I started this conversation, this defense did give the Niners some problems a year ago. It's a difficult defense to play against, and they can really pressure you. So that's something that the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan will really have to be aware of. Chris Forster, one of the best line coaches in the league, they'll be working on that, you know, trying to understand all their pressure concepts with different personnel on the field, because that's the last thing for any quarterback, to start a game where you feel like you're under pressure.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films, with us here on Willard and Dibbs. And that's to say this, yes, it's the same concept defensively, but a lot of new personnel. Their defensive line is almost completely different.
Yeah.
Right? I'd wonder if you could compare that group, though, to like the Jets group. Like, what's Brock Purdy facing this week versus last week?
I think he's facing a lot more diversity in pressure concepts. You know, the Jets are not really a high-pressure defense, and when they are, their particular concepts are, I don't want to say they're basic, that's not the right word, but they're not. They don't have a ton of them, whereas Minnesota has a lot of different looks. Minnesota often lines up with six or seven on the ball, on the line of scrimmage, so you don't know who's coming, who's dropping out. They make it difficult to try to figure that out, because you have to make sure you protect. You can't just say, well, I think that guy's going to drop out. You can't do that. So you have to, protection becomes a really critical issue. Protection first. You don't have a pass game if you don't have protection.
In Minnesota, with a couple of really vaunted players in the secondary, Stephon yep. Gilmore, and they got Harrison Smith. How do you like those matchups, Minnesota's secondary against the likes of Debo, and assuming Brandon Ayuk can play more, Brandon Ayuk?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're not a heavy man coverage team. That's the thing. Surprisingly, even when they pressure, they play more zone concepts. Now, zones always have a matchup element to them, but they're not a heavy straight man-to-man team. So it's not so much, hey, this guy's going to have Samuel, this guy's going to have Ayuk. That's not really the way they play. So we'll see how it plays out. You know, obviously, they've got some different players. They signed Van Ginkle, who's a really good player from Miami. He showed up this past week. They signed Blake Cashman from Houston, who was very good for Houston a year ago before he got hurt. And what they basically did is they swapped out Daniil Hunter for Jonathan Grenard. Hunter's a little better, but Grenard's a very good player as well.
Greg, before you go, I'd like to ask you this, even though, look, it's only been 1 week, and this might feel a little speculative, but based on what you know and what you saw this week, What kind of an outlook and optimism would you have for this 49er defense as a whole and its standing within the league?
Well, I think their front, let's talk in terms of playing nickel, because you end up playing nickel more than you play base. I think their front six is among the better front sixes in the league. We talked about their down four. We talked about Warner being the best linebacker in the league. Campbell, in my view, will be fine. Obviously, it's safety. I don't know if Hufanga is coming back. You guys might know that better. I don't know what his status is. Obviously, they played Odom, who throughout much of his career has been a high-level special teams player and a spot starter. They used Odom and Jair Brown kind of interchangeably. They both played on the back end. They both played in the box. Ward's a really good corner. The question becomes the other two corner spots. When they're in nickel, Lenoir goes into the slot, and they played Yodam on the outside. You know, I don't know if that's going to stay all year. I don't know what their feeling is about Renardo Green. He's a player I really liked coming out of Florida State. Florida State was a man-heavy defense, played a ton of press man, and I really loved Green. I don't know how he did through training camp, so I can't answer that. But I think that's where, I don't want to call it a concern. I would just say that's what we'll be looking at, to see how that plays out when they play against really good passing offenses and really good receivers.
Greg, we're going to do it every Wednesday, and you just showed everybody why. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks. Look forward to it next week.
Yeah, indeed. So do we. That's Greg freaking Cosell right there. Yeah, it was.
Yep.
Yeah, it was.
Knowledge all over the board.
Yeah, that was good stuff. That was meaty. That was a sandwich.
Always. I love the insight. And, you know, every time with Greg Cosell, we're going to look back and then we're going to pivot and look ahead and see what we've got coming up. And, you know, as we get into tomorrow and Friday's show, we'll break down everything with Minnesota. But you were higher on Minnesota than I was going into week one, and so I feel like I'm playing a little bit of catch-up, because you were saying before, we were naming off the dreadful teams.
Yeah.
And I wanted to throw Minnesota in there, and you said, not so fast, my friend.
Yeah.
They might be better than you think, and as I've done more of a, not quite a deep dive yet, but we're getting toward the deep end, starting to get in there a little bit now, they have a good veteran defense, and Sam Darnold might be the right quarterback for right now.
Maybe. Like, I'm still open to who knows, you might be right, because they just played the Giants.
True.
And so I think a lot of teams, like the Saints right now, you're like, wow, the Saints are good. Probably not. They just played the Panthers. So I think there's that. But here's what I do know about Minnesota. They're very well coached. You know, O'Connell is good. Flores on the defense is good. They're very well coached. And so, similar to what we see when Kyle Shanahan gets his hands on a quarterback, whatever Sam Darnold's best is, you're going to see it now. A lot of us thought you might see it with the Niners, but he never really got a chance. Brock stayed healthy. I'm not saying this is that, but it's maybe among the next best thing options for Darnold. And now he doesn't have to look over his shoulder. He doesn't have to think about, like, when are they going to move the kid along? Like, he's got the whole year to himself. And so I don't think it'll be great, but they're at minimum serviceable. And their place is always a difficult place to play. First road game of the year. We still don't know, like, about Christian McCaffrey. Seems like most people are leaning no. More on that in a second. But yeah, this is not a walkover. And so I would flatly reject, if you're against Christian McCaffrey playing in this game, you may well have a point. But don't make it because they're playing Minnesota. You don't need Christian. You're just playing Minnesota. You can go 2-0 without Christian. I don't know. I know they're a 6-point favorite on the road. That feels like too much to me.
Yeah, I was looking at some different metrics and some different tools that are used for handicapping, and most of the places I've seen have the real value in this about 5. So the 49ers are giving up a point greater than what the experts are valuing this spread at. So the numbers would tell you it should be a 5-point game, but I do look at, you know, a lot of the factors you were mentioning, first road game, questions about McCaffrey, and all the rest of it, and it is a little bit of a difficult place to play, but when you look at any game on their schedule, it's more of a should win for the Niners than a could win. Now, you're not going to go 17-0 most likely, but even without McCaffrey, you're going to still be favored, and you should go out there and be able to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. I'm not saying the Vikings are going to win the game or anything, but, like, this will be a challenge. And, again, that has us circling back to the McCaffrey conversation. And here's where we started the show, and we got plenty of time for you to weigh in on this still at 888-957-9570. And the basic question is, knowing all that we know, what would your game plan for the year be for Christian McCaffrey? Let's let you know, quote-unquote, all that we know. Let's start with Kyle Shanahan and his initial update with regard to McCaffrey today.
Christian is still limited and not just out. I'm not a doctor, but I would read that as a positive sign for how he feels.
I'm not a doctor either, but I take that as positive. Yeah.
You agree?
Yes, I do agree. But I'm not a doctor.
I mean, I sort of feel the same way. Like, you would have surprised me 2 nights ago if you had said Christian's going to practice Wednesday. Like, the idea of him practicing this week, okay. Practicing Wednesday, because this is the beginning of the practice week. And you know, if you're a question mark, they, especially as a veteran, they often leave you out to Thursday, sometimes Friday.
Yeah.
But he's out there today, so that tells me that at least they're reckoning with this. Like, they are thinking maybe he might play this week.
And this backs up the notion that he really was a game time decision, because Shanahan even said today he was fully counting on and planning for Christian McCaffrey to be able to go out there and play. So I think it was closer to him giving it a go than what people want you to believe. Like, oh, conspiracy. On Friday, he was already shut down. I don't believe that. And I also think that he goes through limited practice today, hopefully tomorrow and Friday, and then you get to a point where you fly to Minnesota and the flight goes well and you give it a go with him.
Yeah, and then there's this, because Kyle Shanahan was asked, have you considered putting him on IR?
No, I've never considered that. Considered him to play last week, so definitely not thinking about 4 weeks off.
You know, so when like, because we hear Achilles and everyone's like, oh my God, just put him away. Especially with these turf games coming up, just put him away. That's not where the Niners' heads are right now.
Yeah, their head is in winning in Minnesota and putting the best product out there to give yourself a chance to win, and that includes Christian McCaffrey. Now, I personally would exercise more caution, but you're right, Mark, and you said it earlier in the show, if the medical team says he's healthy and Christian and Kyle think that he's healthy, he's going to play.
You play football.
And that's the way it goes.
Christian spoke himself and said this about the game week preparation.
A Monday morning, just moving around a little bit. You know, I prepare every week to play. My mindset every week is I'm going to play. You know, there's been weeks where I'll go the full week, not even feeling good enough to do the walkthrough. And then I wake up and my body's capable of a lot of cool things. And, you know, mentally, I'm always prepared to play. And then woke up and it was a group decision. Very tough one. I hate not playing. But look at it as a chess move and, you know, something that hopefully we can benefit from the rest of the season.
I just want to add this in real quick, too, because he was asked about the fact that this game is on turf.
Yeah, if you can't run on turf, you can't run on the field, can't run on grass, can't run on turf. If you can go, you can go.
Okay, so non-issue as far as turf grass.
Yeah.
And he is preparing as if he will play
this weekend. You have to prepare as if you're going to play, and that's the mindset that you need to take into any week. And the fact that he was able to go through practice, albeit limited, is a positive. Yep. And if he goes from limited to Friday, he's a full participant, then watch out. He's playing on Sunday.
And Doc Feely with us yesterday on Achilles tendonitis and what exactly you can take from that.
In many ways, a calf strain is going to be just as bad, if not worse, than the Achilles tendonitis. It really just depends on the severity of the tendonitis. All it really means is there's inflammation along the tendon, which as a 28 to 30-year-old running back with a lot of mileage, it's kind of expected he's going to get that at some point during his career. If not this year, next year. So I don't think it's a big deal. He's going to get a lot of treatment for it. I think it's important for him to be able to limit his reps during the season. I think we've seen that in the last couple of years. He's somebody that does a great job at a certain number of reps. And then if we have a suitable backup, that's even better.
Okay, so now you know what we know. What would you do? When are you going to play him? When he plays? How much are you playing him? What's the right touch count throughout the year? Jordan Mason, how does he factor in? Let's go to Devon, who's in an Uber. What's up, Devon? Thanks for calling.
Hey, gentlemen, how y'all doing today?
Real good.
So, as a former football player and somebody that's torn my left Achilles, it's not fun, right? I like this Mason kid a lot, and we're just going to put the rat on the table, man. I think to bring McCaffrey back either to get a warm-up game against the Patriots if he's feeling good, well, on the 29th. And if not, you don't do that. You bring him out against the Chiefs. You got to have him against the Chiefs. You got to press those guys, bring all the big guns out October 20th. So I think you just rest him. You got to rest him. And you got to see what you got with this Mason kid. And because you guys got talent on both sides of the ball, all three phases, actually. Yeah. So I believe in him. I hope he's healthy. And I'm a diehard Raider fan, but I love good ball.
Thank you, Devon.
Niners are playing good.
I appreciate when former high-level football-playing athletes side with the Dibber, and I'll go third person, because when you have a guy like Devon toughing it out through an Uber to make a call of that quality and say you should probably rest Christian McCaffrey, makes me feel really good about my position on the issue.
Is that your take?
That's exactly.
I haven't heard you say that.
That they should rest him.
Until the Chiefs game?
Well, as long as you need to. I thought he said the Patriots game. You get him warmed up for the Patriots game.
No, he said maybe you give him a warm-up game for the Patriots game. Yeah. But he would vote save him for the Chiefs game, which is well over a month away.
Well, if you don't lose until then, it's genius. And, you know.
Well, that's a huge if.
Oh, Devon's been through it now. He's had the Achilles burst, and it's not pleasant.
This is all I'm saying, and I wanted to ask Devon,
too. Devon.
I wanted to ask him if he had a warning shot when he tore his. In other words, did he feel something leading up to it?
Oh, man.
I do wonder about that, but here's what I would say. This is what us fans do that football teams don't. There is this assumption in the back of our mind because the 49ers are so good. Save them for the Chiefs. We'll be 5-0, and everything will be fine. Dude, these are hard. They're all going to be hard. Even the Patriot game. They're all hard. And you just can't take schedules and opponents lightly like that. I just don't think they'll do that. If this guy's ready to go, he should play.
You rest him, get Minnesota, you get by him, then you realize the Rams, you know, they got injuries, you rest them there, you get the win. The Patriots are laughing stock. You're going to rest them against the Patriots. Now you're 4-0, and CMC is fresh as a daisy.
Wouldn't that be fun if life were like that?
Yeah, right.
It ain't going to go that way, by the way. Spoiler alert, it ain't going that way. Mm. We're sponsored by Safeway. Plenty more time for your phone calls. 888-957-9570. And before we get out of here, we have to tell you what iconic Bay Area sports entity needs to rest in peace because it's over. And
damn,
that's next on Willard and Dibs.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Will and Dibby on 95.7 The Game.
I've decided we just all, and when I say we, I'm not in this particular case talking about myself sometimes, but you're all worrying too much. Like, we did this for an entire offseason.
I'm mentally invested.
Like, we did this for a whole offseason. But the holdouts and the hold-ins and the Super Bowl hangover.
I don't know.
And then 32-19, and we're like, oh. Okay. And now we're doing it with Christian's Achilles tendonitis.
Yep.
Which he is practicing through again today. And seemingly, and I'm not saying it's not worthy of concern. I'm not saying to be flippant about it. I'm not a doctor. I don't know what they're going to do. I trust them and him to do the right thing. But how many of you are ready to just punt the first month and a half of the season with no Christian, basically with no knowledge that anything you're saying kind of makes sense in the medical world?
It's not a full punt. I mean, if you win in games, then it doesn't matter, you know, if he plays or not.
No, I mean punting on the idea of Christian playing.
Right.
Like, why? Based on what?
Based on the idea that he could get hurt worse than he's already hurt.
And that would be true when he gets back, too.
Of course.
Whenever he plays. That would be true against Kansas City.
It's similar to why many people want the starters off the field when it's a 3-score game. Now, the likelihood of McCaffrey getting a more severe injury is greater than a team blowing a 3-score lead in the final 5 minutes of a football game, but it's all relative. You're trying to mitigate risk through actions, and if you feel like you can mitigate some of the risk through the action of not playing him, he's less likely to get hurt if he doesn't play.
I mean, all that math is acknowledged. However, I just think tucked into all of this is the idea that because Monday was comfortable, a lot of you are assuming the 49ers can just walk onto the field and win these games with or without Christian. I don't see it that way.
I don't either.
All.
Yeah, and I'll have my official pick on Friday for this very game.
If the 49ers 10 days from now are 1-2, now are we suddenly not worried about his Achilles? Hey, buddy. pat on the back, get your butt out there, let's go, take the risk. This is so week to week. These games are so hard. I think you have to take the schedule and what week it is. You got to take it out of your mind, in my opinion. I think you have to just go with what doctors are saying. And if he and doctors clear him to play, you play him. You play him.
I get that.
Yeah, but, that's what I would do.
Well, and I think the idea of clearing him, it's a different bar in September than it is in January. If this was the divisional playoff game, there'd be no question about him getting cleared to play. He would play in the football game. This is week two, and week one was even more of a dramatic case where if that was the NFC Championship game, McCaffrey plays on Monday night.
I get that, but I guess what there's a middle ground to what we're saying here. I understand that at the beginning of the season, if you're in some sort of a middle ground, you are allowed the latitude of let's lean conservative, as opposed to it's January, it's a must win.
Exactly.
Let's lean not conservative.
Aggressive, yeah.
So that I understand. But the idea of just like white flag, see you week seven. You can tell when you listen to them that that's not where their mind is. They're literally going right. Hour by hour right now.
For sure.
But so, I reject the idea that this is scary. Let's just forget September. I'm not there. I don't think they're there.
There's a middle ground to that, and I wouldn't say that I'm there yet, but if we get closer to Sunday, as we get closer to Sunday, if he still isn't healthy enough, then sit him out, and we'll deal with week three. Then we can come back and do this dance again next week, and we can talk about it on Tuesday and Wednesday. He'll speak on Monday. Wednesday will be the practice, and we can do this dance all over again. And if they're 2-0, I can be equally nonchalant. And if they're 1-1, well, if I had hair, it'd be on fire.
I'm with you on that. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Let's this every week. See you at the Chiefs game. I know it's scary. Football's scary.
Yeah.
It just is. Football's scary.
Can I take 60 seconds to
do whatever you want.
Continue the campaign to bury the phrase Super Bowl hangover? Because I've been trying to go through year by year.
Please do.
Philadelphia loses the Super Bowl the next year. They're 10-1.
10-1.
They faded, but they were a playoff team. The year before that, the Bengals lost the Super Bowl. They were in the Final Four the next year. The year before that, the Chiefs lost the Super Bowl. The following year, they were in the Final Four. Again, the Niners in 2020 lost the bowl. Well, they lost their quarterback, so that's a tough one to work through. They didn't have a backup. They went 6-10. The Rams before that, they had a winning record. The Patriots before that, well, they actually went to the Super Bowl and won it the next year. Even the Falcons, the 28-9 collapse that everyone wants to highlight, they were a playoff team the following year. There is no Super Bowl hangover. Let's put that thing to bed.
You're absolutely right. And I would argue you can already tell, if blessed with health, I can guarantee you almost certain teams that are at minimum in the Final Eight. If the Niners are healthy, they're going to the Final Eight. I have zero question about that. They're too good. Look at the way the other players and coaches around the league talk about them. I mean, Devontae Adams was on with Kay Adams yesterday, and he's like, I mean, there's just not a whole lot you can do about them. And he's talking about it after they played without their best player.
Exactly.
So if they are blessed with some sort of health, I don't think you need to worry about whether they can make the Final Eight and probably the Final Four. I'm never going to assume Super Bowl. Teams are good. You can lose one day.
Yep.
You go home. But the 49ers are not going to be healthy and go 7-10.
Yeah.
That's not possible.
Agreed.
So I agree with you. We know who the good teams are.
Right.
And then which ones stay healthy? The Packers, off to a really crappy start. That's a good team, but they had a hard assignment, and then their quarterback got hurt, and now everything suddenly hangs in the balance.
They've got work to do, but you might write them off, though.
I'm not writing them off, but they might be 0-4 in 4 weeks.
Could be. Or they could be 2-2 or 3-1, you know?
Exactly.
They have enough talent around Malik Willis where it's not an automatic that they're going to lose all these games.
No, of course it's not automatic. You're right.
I think 3-point dogs against Indy.
They've got the Colts at home. You know, yeah, they could win that game.
Yeah. They're allowed to.
They are. I went to the rule book.
I love it.
They're allowed to win.
It's one of my favorite Willardisms.
I've never seen Malik Willis play well in an NFL game, but I've only seen him play like three times.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see. We'll see. And Anthony Richardson's super exciting, but he's inaccurate. And he's young, so we'll see. But he's super, like, they lost by two. They probably should have won that game by three touchdowns.
Yeah.
He hucked the ball over so many people's heads that were wide open. So we'll
see. I'm glad he's not my quarterback because it's a every play you're holding your breath.
Yeah, he takes a lot of hits.
Yeah, and he takes chances and he makes great plays, but he's just like, wow. It's very dramatic.
Tuesday nights will never be the same.
Well, it is the worst day of the week after all.
It is. It is.
I mean, Tuesday.
And it just got worse.
What happened?
Rest in peace. Creamsicle orange City Connect jerseys.
Wait, what?
That was it.
I know it's over for the year, but you mean like...
No, they will never wear those uniforms ever again.
Damn it, Farhan!
Oh, by the way,
speaking of Farhan... Damn it, Farhan!
Did you see the news break that Farhan Zaidi and Bob Melvin, who have the concurrent contracts... that were believed to be through 2026. Turns out 2026 is a club option.
Yeah.
So, in theory, both Bo Mel and Farhan are already now, like next year would be the final year on their deal.
Unless my father-in-law had his way, or his druthers.
Which would be?
Then they would have about 2 weeks left in their tenure.
Oh, no, they might.
Right. No, they might. They're entering the lame duck year, so... I mean, are you really going to have these guys on their last year both come back?
I would be very surprised if either of them got a contract extension.
That would be shocking.
That would be shocking.
I would be very surprised if they removed both. Bob Melvin getting 1 year, a disappointing year.
Yep.
And my father-in-law was adamant today about how many more chances does Farhan get?
Oh, I completely agree. I don't think Bo Mel's going anywhere. That would really surprise me in all forms. Farhan, I really don't know. But seeing
what would you put it at right now? Is it 50-50?
No.
60-40 Gonzo?
58% he stays.
Whoa. Put that in the cap, Grandy. 42% he's Gonzo. 50-80 stays.
That's based on...
No, you got a good feel for this stuff, Mark.
Just be hungry. It's dinner time.
Fair enough.
But anyway,
it's a Tuesday.
No, but doesn't the fact that next year is the last year of his deal, for those who are like, they're not firing him, he's got 2 years left on his deal. No, he's got one. Doesn't that change the calculus a little bit?
It sure does.
Yeah.
It sure does.
Yeah. Rest in peace, City Connects. I own one. I will be the only one wearing them at Oracle Park.
Well, you don't even wear it anymore because your Gabe Kapler costume kind of got outdated. Because he's not around anymore.
He's not
That's
on the
when
team.
You wore it.
Yeah. Well, I've worn it without the beard before,
okay.
too.
It was phenomenal, that costume. You got to start thinking about this year.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got to come up with a new one this year. It's coming right up now.
I know. I punted last time. Grandy, what are you doing? What do you have on your show?
Last night, Kyle Madsen and I had the football hour, so I wasn't able to use this yesterday on Best of the Game. Jerry Rice, the GOAT, on with Ponte and Shasky. So we're going to hear that conversation coming up next.
Okay, here comes the GOAT, and that's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. You want to do it again tomorrow?
Week 2 starts tomorrow.
Let's go.
Sports, man. Love this time of year.
For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark. Shoot your shot. It's all you got.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.